Life Audio.
Hey, welcome to the Happy Ramp Podcast. I am Ted Kluck, joined as always in studio by my good friends, my partners in radio, Barnabas Piper and Ron Martin. Boys, we got some tech stuff to discuss because we're nothing if not three just tech wizards here. Ronnie's audio never works. I don't know what's going on in the world. Piper is the IT guy to the program. Thank God he's here, or else we'd all be in a world of hurt, boys. We wouldn't be the podcasting moguls that we are, just bringing in truckloads of money. Doing your taxes is always like an interesting moment where you realize just how well the podcast has done over the last year. And you're not at all sad and depressed and calculating the hourly rate at all. That's not my experience at all. But boys, we'll get into some Gen Z tech stuff right after this quick break.
Well, good day to you. It's Joel with The King Country dropping in to let you know that our brand new film, Unsung Hero, is in theaters now.
It's Luke here. We've teamed up with the creators of Jesus Revolution to bring you this adventure of a lifetime. It's a powerful, true story about a family uniting, growing in their faith, and facing the impossible together.
In theaters now, unsunghero.movie for more information.
Rated PG. Parental guidance suggested.
What impacts you every day? There is one book that influences almost every aspect of our lives. Museum of the Bible reveals the Bible's impact on your favorite musicians and artists, the way we measure time, social justice, our national monuments, and more. The Bible's impact is all around you. Discover how at museumofthebible.org/impact.
All right, boys, we're back. It's been a couple of weeks since we've done radio together. You guys have been traveling. You're very busy men, very important men. But we had a little tech snafu early in the show before we started recording. And somebody mentioned Gen Z. And because I teach college students who are, I guess, Gen Z now, you know, we're done with millennials in the college business and it's on to Gen Z. I made the observation that they have actually swung the pendulum back in the other direction, in that they're probably as bad as my parents are when it comes to anything related to the computer. Like, if they can't do it on their phone, they're completely flummoxed. They don't know how to attach a document to an email. We've kind of swung the pendulum back around in that they are kind of useless when it comes to tech. My question to you boys is, have you seen this out of Gen Z? Do you have any like connection to Gen Z? And then I've got a millennial thing that I want to run by you guys. Piper, well, let's start with you.
Okay, so Gen Z is like early 20s on down through like high school age. Is that about right? Like sort of that,
yeah,
that
roughly.
Age bracket?
I guess that's what I'm calling it.
Okay.
Yeah.
I just, you know, once you get below me, I'm just sort of like, I don't know, get off my lawn. So I get confused.
Yeah, I have
two kids, one of whom is will be going into high school next year, and the other one is in high school now. And the older one has learned how to use a computer, sort of. And the younger one, we had a conversation a couple weeks ago, and she's like, I don't understand what email is. So like the foundational form of communication for our generation or generations, depending on where the dividing line is, it is completely lost on them. She's like, you know, she can iMessage and she gets all, you know, knows all the different communication apps and whatever. But if it's not an app, completely lost on her. So yeah, absolutely no help tech-wise. Even when it comes to like changing settings on her phone, if it's not just sort of like in the app, she's like, I don't know how to do this. And I'm like, well, this is, you know, I know how to go into your settings and change things. And so it is a weird thing where they're such digital natives that they're completely useless at anything digital. They're also useless without anything digital. So it makes you wonder, you know, boy, what kind of success are they set up for?
Yeah, we got to develop some skill sets and quickly. Big R, what's your first like sentient like memory of email? because I have a real clear one right at the beginning of email. Like, where were you in life when email became a thing?
Gosh, dude, that is such a great question, man. I've always been super late to the game when it comes to any of these things. I was like the last guy I know on Twitter and, you know, all that kind of stuff. And so I remember email was one of the, like, I was the last of the holdouts, right? Yeah. And pretty soon it got to a place where it's like, we have no way of even talking to you, man. Like, you got to do this thing. Like, you got to get on this thing. And I'm not like the anti guy. I just don't, you know, I don't know. I was able to function without it for so long. I was real late to the, I was like the last guy on the block to get a cell phone and all that kind of stuff. I'm trying to think about that initial like email thing and like how weird and rigid and awkward it felt.
Yeah.
And how it dawned on me at some point that I didn't have to do phone calls anymore.
Yeah.
If I could just get my head wrapped around that. And I was like, all right, so I'm gonna put some time and effort into mastering this, you know, technological wizardry, right?
Oh, yeah.
It's gonna save me all this stuff. But yeah, it must have, like, what year was it for you? That's what I'm kind
of hung up. Dude, so I got married in December of 96, and then I transferred colleges because my lady had graduated, and she was working, like, her first, like, super boring office job, and she had email, and I had email through the new college that I was at, and it was real primitive, dude. It was called, like, VAX, right? V-A-X. And I remember a couple classes I had in like computer labs where I was like, oh my gosh, like I can write a letter to my wife during school. This is great, you know? And she's like emailing me from work. And I just felt like the king of the world in that moment. Like anything was possible, you know? Like I found a new way to not pay attention in school, and it was really fun for me. So I remember a lot of like email kind of letter writing, like weirdly mechanical. And then, yeah, it became the way that you avoided the phone call, which, like, was really the upside to me in the whole thing. But, yeah, Pipe, to your point, it's wild how quickly email has become antiquated. So, like, in the
span it's like for grandparents.
It's for grandparents. So in the span of, like, 20 years, it's become this antiquated thing. And I describe it to my students as, like, it's like DMing, but without all the trappings of whatever platform you're DMing on. Right. So it just strips all that other stuff away. And you get to just like chat with
them. Just find it amazing that they truly do not know what it is.
Yeah, they know what it is. They just don't use it. Like they view it how, you know, how like our parents had, like their generation had shows like, I don't know, MASH or, you know, some show that seemed antiquated to us, but was like really great and relevant to them. That's kind of how email seems to our students. I think it's just sort of this relic of a different time.
Is it going away? Like, because, you know, I had a conversation with my kids, you know, she was talking about, you know, what is email, and I was like, boy, you better learn this, because like it is the communication medium of like adulthood, doing work.
Yeah.
And then I thought about it, and I thought, well, will that remain true? I think it's true right now, but will it remain true? Because, you know, right now it's how every business or organization puts out mass communications. It's how you communicate with people. If you want to, like, if we receive speaking invitations, it's via email and those kinds of things. Like, it's hard to see that changing, but somebody would have said the same thing about, like, you know, the Pony Express and the U.S. Postal Service at one point as well.
Well, I wonder too, it's like, yeah, that's a really good point, Pipe. I kind of think of it now is email is something that you have an initial contact with somebody with. And then if they don't become better friends, you kind of keep it on that tip, on that level.
Mm-hmm. It's like the digital version of the friend zone.
I mean, dude, it's just, I don't know what that is, but yeah.
Do you want me to explain friend zone to you, Ronnie?
Yeah, I don't know. I've never even heard that. I don't know what that is.
Friend zone is like, you know, so if there's a group of guys and girls who hang out and the guy really likes the girl and she does not really like him in return, but, you know, enjoys being his friend, he gets put firmly in the friend zone where he cannot get too close. This isn't too intimate. We're not dating. We don't, you know, we do not mutually like each other. And so it is an unenviable position to be in. That's like it's a lower status than, you know, dating or seeing somebody or whatever kids are calling it these days.
No, that's funny because I've heard of that. I've just never heard of it called that.
mean, yeah. So email is like the adult business equivalent of the friend zone. Like if we keep it at email, we're not that tight. I'm not giving you my cell phone number to text me at any time of day.
Dude, I think that's kind of what it is. I think there's like a lot of truth to that, right? Because like you know how it is when if you're chatting with somebody and you know that maybe there needs to be some contact, like you kind of go back and forth in your mind with whether you're going to give them your phone number or your email, right? Because like if you give them your phone number, that's something you have to deal with. Like it's something that it's like, okay, I can't say no, I didn't get that text, but you can say, well, the guy just got buried beneath 100 emails, right? Yeah. It's interesting how that works.
I do it every week.
Correct. See,
because I don't have social, email is a much more intimate thing for me. Like email is not the friend zone. Email is like we're dating a little bit, you know? Like if you're sending me an email, if it's not a work thing but a personal thing, chances are like we're pretty good friends. But it's all I have. You know, I don't have that intermediate step of like social.
Well, you have texting, T.
I have texting. I mean, yeah, I do have texting.
Yeah, I'm just talking about text. When I say phone number, I just mean.
Yeah.
Like, man, I don't talk to anybody through social media, like private messaging. Like, that to me seems like literally the Stone Ages.
Yeah.
But like in terms of texting, like I would say this, man. I would say I remember the first time I started texting.
Yeah.
And that to me was the game changer, even more than email.
Yeah. Fun deal to you? Like right away, were you on board with it?
Dude, I like it was weird because it immediately, like for me and Big M, it opened up vistas, right?
Yeah.
It was like that was the thing where we could chat all day now, no matter where we were. And I was still traveling a lot for music stuff back then. So it was like, dude, we could just be chatting all the time now. And it was so convenient.
Yeah.
You know, I loved it for that. And then, and then, like anything else, it just starts ruling your life because, you know, you switch everything over to that medium. And all of a sudden now it's like, oh, my gosh, you know, my phone's blowing up. You know, it's that kind of a thing where it's like everybody's talking to you through that. And you feel overwhelmed.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. It's another way to feel overwhelmed for sure. It begs the question, like, what did our parents' generation feel overwhelmed by? You know, if they didn't have email and they didn't have text and they didn't have social, they just had a house phone and they had like regular mail. I wonder if like in the aggregate, they felt like less overwhelmed than we do.
I just think they felt overwhelmed by actual life.
Yeah. That's
probably
right. The things
that are meant to overwhelm you.
Yeah, right. Like the normal.
The serious things like where's the bill? How are the bills going to get paid? And how's my parents doing? How's my kids doing? How are my kids doing? You know, like all that stuff.
Dude, do you guys feel super stressed by like kind of the like third or fourth tier guy in your life who you've given your phone number to, who like he sends that little text. And for me, like that's really loud. Like there's a sense of, I have to respond to this. Mm-hmm. I have to respond to it in a certain way or else I look like an a-hole, but we really don't have a relationship. You know what I mean?
Yes. I think 100% stressful.
Yeah. Talk about that, dude. How do you handle it?
Well, it's badly. I'm pretty sure if I respond, I try to respond well, but my thing is like, I will wait days, maybe weeks to respond to texts sometimes, you know?
Yeah.
And some of that is like, I'm going to pretend it's principle and be like, look, just because you texted me, I'm not obligated to interrupt my life to respond to you. But once I've reached the point where we could have sent three letters back and forth, like I'm pretty sure that principle no longer stands. So
that's kind of good though, dude. You're training them, you know, and like I'll get a text like that from some dude, and I'll kind of like roll my eyes or say something to KK, and KK's like, you got to train them, dude. You know, if you respond right away, they're gonna think something that isn't there, you know. But
yeah, and
logical thing where I have to get back immediately.
Well, and this is just a basic thing. Gen Z might not understand this because they don't know how to change settings on their phones. Always turn off read receipts so that they don't know that you saw their text. They probably know, but they don't have any verifiable proof that you actually looked at it. But the other piece is, and I'm sure Ronnie has experiences with this, when you are in ministry, it's a really personal thing with a bunch of people you don't know that well. So that throws a whole monkey wrench into the dynamic. So like on Sunday, one of the guys in our college ministry who's, you know, he's going through some stuff and he wanted to get together sometime and he's like, hey, can we meet up? And I knew that if I was like, hey, here's my email, he he would never email me. So I gave him my cell phone number. And as soon as I did it, I was like, I hope this dude's chill. Like, I hope he's not hitting me up at 11 p.m. like, hey, man, I got a question about this book I'm reading or whatever. But that's the sort of like the risk in the ministry side of things is you're giving accessibility to yourself out of necessity and also opening yourself up for like an abundance of these, what the sort of non-friend, easy access relationships, which is awkward and uncomfortable at times.
What impacts you every day? There is one book that influences almost every aspect of our lives. Museum of the Bible reveals the Bible's impact on your favorite musicians and artists, the way we measure time, social justice, our national monuments, and more. The Bible's impact is all around you. Discover how at museumofthebible.org/impact.
Hi, everyone. If you've been injured in an accident that was not your fault, listen up. We have legal professionals standing by to answer your questions for free. Call now and find out if you have a case and how much it's potentially worth. Call 800-497-4410. I'm here with spokesman John Wolf. So, John, tell everyone listening who should call right now.
Well, Maria, first off, thank you for having me here. It's always nice to answer the listeners' questions. Now, as far as who should call in, anyone who's been injured in an accident and think you deserve compensation, give us a call right now. 800-497-4410. You'll find out if you have a case and how much it's potentially worth.
Thanks, John. You heard it, folks. Take advantage of this opportunity and call now. 800-497-4410.
Advertisement sponsored by Legal Help Center may not be available in all states.
Big R, do you have thoughts on that?
I don't know. Yeah, there's a balance somewhere in the mix. I don't feel like I get a ton of texts from people that I'm like thinking, why do they have my number? I'm trying to think, right. I'm even like looking at my phone right now, kind of scrolling down. Like, do I have, like, am I inundated with that? And I don't know. I'm like, everybody that's on there is like somebody I would get back to, you know? And it's like, you know, you should like, we're tight enough where you should be writing me. This is like, it's an appropriate.
Yeah.
It's like an appropriate level of friendship to where they should have my number. But, I don't know. How do you have boundaries? I think that's what we're driving at here.
Dude, like, so
how do you have boundaries?
I don't struggle with a significant question text. I struggle more with the dude who will reach out and maybe he'll send like a meme or maybe he'll send like a, hey, did you see this thing? And it's sort of like just a reminder, like, hey, I'm here. I'm in your life. And now you're required to respond. I'm not asking you like to pray for me. I'm not asking you like a deep question. I'm just sort of reminding you that I exist. And that's the one I have the toughest time kind of like getting out of bed for, you know.
That's interesting, T. Yeah, you know, I'll tell you, I want to hear you guys feed into this. The one that I'm going to get in trouble for this. The one that This is our notwithstanding.
Yeah.
That's the right phrase.
Yeah.
Because ours isn't like that. Ours is all business and money and you know high finance,
decadence and finance.
100%. But the things that drive me slightly batty are the text threat, like the group text.
Yeah.
Where it's nothing but fun and memes. Like I just never engage in those because it's not my style. Mm-hmm. And so it's like, and then your phone's blowing up because it's like, this is funny, and here's another meme, here's another GIF, and here's another, and like those are the ones where I'm like, oh boy, oh boy.
Yeah, I would say I have a pretty indifferent relationship to that sort of thing. Like you, I just sort of silence it, or if it's legitimately funny, I'll lean in and be a part of it, but it almost never is.
I mean, I think that's the problem.
Yeah,
right there,
exactly. Well,
see, I find those are the, like, I just silence notifications on those and periodically I'll open it up and be like, oh, you have 87 notifications in this thread, to which I just open it up so the notifications go away, close it and move on with my life. It's the ones from those non-friend contacts who will periodically text and be like, hey, man, what's up? This feels like a trap. Like, if I respond good, like, am I opening this up for like an invitation to lunch that I don't want to have? If this is
I'm going to be at lunch with that guy in 2 days. you know.
Is this I don't know what is being asked of me with that, because that's a very innocuous text from somebody who we don't, you know, we're not tight. And because like close friends don't send, "Hey man, what's up?" They send like, they just jump into the middle of the conversation they intend to have with you. You know,
totally.
They'll just text you and be like, "Hey man, question about what we're doing on whatever evening," or "Hey, have you read this book?" or whatever it is. And the non-friends always kind of tee it up with that generic greeting. And you're like, if I engage with this could be like 30 minutes of my life right now, plus a meal commitment. And, you know, and possibly they're going to ask me to, like, I don't know, write something for them, which
help them move. Like, I'm going to be carrying a sofa in 2 days, you know?
Yeah. Who knows what's going on?
I don't know. I feel like I can, this is a weird one. Like, tell me how you guys respond to this, but so this is a two-parter. So I always feel like when I'm done talking on a text thread, like I'm done. Like, I'm not, like, I don't feel like I have to make an announcement. I'm just like, it's just, that's it. It's, there's nothing left to say or whatever. I can't talk anymore, but like, I'm not sending like the follow up saying, "Well, you know, it's been great and these moments have been really valuable to me." But here's part two to that. So it's so funny. There's certain people that it's a tiny handful, but whenever I'm in a text thread with them and it's somebody that would be like, I know them, I need to talk to them about something. And I can tell that they're rushing through to get to the point where they can say, "Okay, buddy, well, I got to be starting this other thing now, so I'm going to have to let you go." And it's like, I'm like, "Well, dude, you didn't even have to say that. I just need a little information from you. Like, you don't have to feel pressure to sign off or anything like that." It's almost like they make it that much more awkward because they feel like they have to do that. You know what I'm saying?
I think that might be germane to ministry, where the field is populated by over communicators anyway, you know?
Right.
So I think in the world of just normal everyday dudes, one of the great things about being a dude, and we can't talk about gender, I get that. That makes us the worst. But like, I don't feel like there's the requirement to talk to each other a whole lot. And so if you just kind of go silent on a text thread for a couple of days, it's no big deal. But the thing that I feel most compelled to respond on, so when like it's GIFs or like, I don't know, screenshots from Twitter or whatever, you know, going back and forth, I feel like I can ignore it. But every once in a while, and this is the example I always give. So I was watching a Steelers game a couple of years ago, and my best buddy from college is a Steelers fan. His name's Corey. He's from Pennsylvania. And he texted me, like, Ben Roethlisberger had thrown a touchdown pass to this guy named Pat Freiermuth. And he's like, "Roethlisberger to Freiermuth, that sounds like two dorms at Taylor University." And I'm like, "Oh my gosh, that wins the night. That's so funny." So like an original humor thing that's not lazy, that's like born of a moment. I feel like I'm responding to that way more than I'm responding to like, I don't know, some funny quote that Charles Barkley said 3 days ago or whatever that somebody's texting me. That's where I'm going in. Well, pipe your thoughts.
That brings us full circle to Gen Z. And I was ragging on my kids for this, although my kids are actually pretty funny. Gen Z, by and large, does not know how to do humor. They know how to share other people's humor. Their entire sense of humor
is, hey, good. Did
you see this? Not... Mm-hmm. Like, I can make you laugh with my wit and cleverness. Like, they don't, and part of that's because they're not allowed to insult one another, you know? Like, that's not in the safe space. And so, you know, you work out your sense of humor by dogging on the people closest to you. That's how all comics get started, as well as funny normal people. And so, like, as much as they're inept at computers, they're also inept at jokes. Because if somebody else didn't write it, they don't even know if it's funny.
That's fascinating. Mm. Do you think Pipe, and Ron, you can weigh in on this too, do you think they just don't value humor? Because I remember growing up, like, it was important to be funny. Like, kind of important. It wasn't like the most important thing, but it was like in your friend group, one of the ways that you added value was like being funny. You know what I mean?
Or at least having a sense of humor. Yeah. Even if you weren't the funniest guy in the convo, like, just have a sense of humor.
Right. You could be a good audience member, you know, you could be funny. Right. But like, I feel like in their friend groups, that's not even really a priority. And I really like, I wonder what that looks like. I wonder what it looks like for them to hang out where like being funny is not a priority, you know, whereas it was just so much a part of our culture with like Saturday Night Live and the comedies we grew up with. And like, to your point, Pipe, just making fun of each other, but kind of in a loving way. They just don't have that. So like, what replaces it, I guess, is my question.
Is it just I'm just not so familiar with that generation. You know, my kid's like the youngest millennial.
Yeah.
You know, so she doesn't, but she's super fun. I mean, she literally like is in a comedy group, you know, she's funny. And it's like, yeah, that whole thing, like that does not resonate with me. Like, I totally don't get that because like what replace, is it just earnestness? Is that what's replaced it?
Which, I don't know.
Yeah. Or like earnestness meets like sensitivity and seriousness. So like, I met a guy last week who he's one of those people who I'm like, this guy is a absolutely wonderful person. And I absolutely do not know how to relate to him because he's only earnest. Just genuine through and through. And I'm like, man, I trust you. I would put my life in your hands. You are not a fun hang. And, and so I don't mean that kind of earnestness. I mean, like, you have to be sensitive about everything. There's that sort of thing where it's like, you can't say that, you know, there's sort of like that sort of ready to be offended. But then also like, there's so much standing next to each other, looking at a third thing. There is so much sharing of TikTok videos, memes, whatever it is. And so it's not like a generation that doesn't laugh. It's just always, hey, did you see this thing? It's hilarious. Hey, did you see this thing? It's hilarious. Instead of like being the hilarious one. And, you know, the idea for like, I'm trying to imagine a group of Gen Z, you know, thinking like 17 to 22 year olds just sitting around a table with food and drinks and just making each other laugh for like 2 hours. And it's
with no phone, with no phones, no devices.
Yeah, just phones absent, like left them in the car. Almost unfathomable to me. Whereas like that's what we do. You know,
that's
like,
what that's, we all did.
Those are the best evenings.
You know what I think they do? I think they get together and it's an exercise in exchanging kind of lists of, look at all this stuff that I like. Right. And it's important to like the right stuff. It's important to be conversant in the right things. But they're not necessarily your things that you've come up with. So I actually think that generation is really good at like triaging lots of information and then curating, call it a persona or call it just a list of affinities or whatever, that sort of reflects who they want to be. And so if you ask a Gen Z person sort of like, who are you or what's the essence of you, you know, they might give you a list of artists that they consume or movies that they like or aesthetics that they connect with or whatever. And to your point, Pipe, it's all this third party stuff, right? But I actually think they're really comfortable doing this. I think Spotify Wrapped is sort of emblematic of this ethos, right? Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, where it's or the coffee order. Okay, so like, I just traveled with Gen Zers. Maybe I talked about this in the last step, but the coffee order is like this paragraph long Myers-Briggs profile. You know, it like it's conveying things like I like to make a lot of choices, or I'm really complicated, or I'm allergic to a lot of things, or whatever it's supposed to communicate. The coffee order is sort of emblematic of, I've looked at this whole universe of coffee options and I've made one for me, you know, which is at odds with like maybe how our generation does it, which is like, just give me a black coffee, like I'm in it for the caffeine or whatever. But everything is like that for them, where
everything has to be personalized. It has to say something about who they are.
Yeah.
Is that what you mean?
Like every consumable thing is a vehicle for self-expression, which I find exhausting, but they seem to actually do it really well.
What impacts you every day? There is one book that influences almost every aspect of our lives. Museum of the Bible reveals the Bible's impact on your favorite musicians and artists, the way we measure time, social justice, our national monuments, and more. The Bible's impact is all around you. Discover how at museumofthebible.org/impact.
Right. I think it's, you know, I said earlier, you know, I kind of made the joke of like, how well are they being set up for success because of this whole technological sort of ineptitude? Like, they're native to it, but they're inept in it. But I think what you just said, Ted, is fascinating, because I think that's actually, they are like advanced computer processors compared to us.
They are.
We get all of this data thrown at us, and we're like, just shut up and keep it simple. Like, I'll take an Americano with no room. Like, I just want black coffee. And they're like, oh, options. And then they can just sort of like, you can just like, the processor starts worrying, and they're like, all right, I don't do dairy, so it's going to be soy or almond or whatever. And then they're like, okay, I prefer caramel over this, but also the cinnamon latte is in season. And they just like, in 15 seconds, they filter all this down to a paragraph order, whereas I'm like, I don't understand any of those words. I just want black coffee. So I think there's an advancement in processing information that is overwhelming to us, that they're just like, that's normal. Like, we just navigate.
Dude, this is so fun. I mean, this is like the day Gen X became geriatric on the happy.
Dude, we are.
You know what I mean? It's just funny the way that we're talking about them. Like, they're this alien race that we literally haven't. We keep saying they and them and those. I don't know.
Yeah.
I have never felt more they and them. Those are my preferred pronouns for today. I've never felt more they and them about Gen Z than I have in the last like 2 months, because my kids just hit the teenage years. Like, they've been teenagers for a while, but they hit like the teenage vibe with a vengeance. And I don't mean that in a bad way. Like, they're the worst, as much as just like, the generation gap just got all the way crystallized in my house. And, you know, my oldest daughter finally just sort of looked at me with the, oh, you're old and you don't understand me face.
Yeah.
Like 2 weeks ago for the first time.
Here's my question with that, Pipe. I like that's so interesting to me. And to your original point, T, that's fascinating, because I'd never thought of it like the way you described it a minute ago. But I'm wondering, like, because, you know, when I'm thinking about my daughter and I'm thinking about millennials, like, they're not that perplexing to me. Yeah. Maybe because it's the generation after ours. Like, I don't feel like I'm just going, I don't get it. I don't know why they say what they say, do what they do. It wasn't really like that for me. But like, we skip this generation, we go to the next one, and we're like, I don't know, these kids.
Yeah.
You know? Has it taken sort of like the next generation for us to finally be like just flummoxed? Dude, like, we just don't get it.
Maybe it has, but I'll end this ep, and I think we should wrap this up, and we should do another ep like on millennials. This will be like a two generation, you know, like episode series. But I'm seeing something kind of hopeful happening here, in that there's this subset of students at my university who are kind of leaning back into analog and leaning into like dudes who are like, I want to wear a Carhartt jacket and like work on carbureted engines, because it's something real. It's something tangible. I can like exert influence over a thing that I like have control over. And it's sort of like they've become so disenfranchised by all the self-expression that's available to them. They're just like, I don't want to have a paragraph long coffee order say something about me. I want to just like have influence over this thing that's lasting. So I'm seeing that attitude kind of pop up, and it's kind of cool. You know, it kind of gives me hope for like, maybe people can listen to a whole record as one consumable thing, you know, rather than, you know, just piecemealing everything. And
it's gone full circle. It's full circling.
I think it's full circling,
because everything goes in cycles.
Everything goes in cycles. So I think maybe it's full circling, and there's some hopefulness in that. But I'm also like legitimately impressed, to Pipe's point, by how much they can assimilate and triage and sort of adopt as their own, and then discard, you know, other aspects of it. It's really kind of remarkable.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, boys, we've done what we always do on this program, in that we've largely disparaged Gen Z. Hopefully they don't feel completely attacked by this, because if they do, they'll let us know. They'll be very hurt. But I hope they don't. We love Gen Z. Piper, you and I have kids who are in Gen Z, and it's...
Assuming they even listen to this program, which you know, there's... that's
Oddly enough, like, I get a lot of students who listen to it. It's strange. And their parents,
it's because everything comes full circle. They like that old school stuff.
I guess they do, man. And we are nothing if not old school in doing what we always do, which is wandering to and fro throughout some topics. And until next time.
We want to take a moment to thank the team at Life Audio for partnering with us on this podcast. Be sure to go to lifeaudio.com and take a look at the other podcasts in their network. They've got shows about prayer, Bible study, parenting, and more.
Are you concerned about tensions in the Middle East? Do you wonder where we're currently at in the biblical timeline? Are we really in the last days? Hi, everyone. I'm Dr. Carl Muller with the Inside the Epicenter podcast. Every week, my co-host, best-selling author Joel Rosenberg, and I answer those questions and more. You'll hear inside knowledge of our meetings with leaders at the highest levels of government in the U.S., Israel, and the Middle East, equipping you to filter the news with biblically sound insights. Find Inside the Epicenter on your favorite podcast app or go to joshuafund.com to listen and subscribe.